I was a musician. I was with a group called the Marquees. I was one of the 427 original Marquees. And I used to watch the disc jockeys come out. They seemed to leave with the best-looking women. And they had more money. They had their own cars and things like that. And I kept thinking, that's for me. I went to a radio school. I got into it. And I, you know, I just now thought about something. I never paid that radio school the rest of the day. I owed them $60. That's a true story. Cool. Tice Turway, if you're out there, I'll pay you. Just, you have to bill me at some point, I guess. But I went to a radio school. I got into radio. Went to Lake Providence, Louisiana. Signed on there. The first morning on the air, I went to sleep for 45 minutes when the first record was playing. Woke up. Record's going, shuk, shuk. And I said, that was Sam the Sham of the Pharaohs. Went on, and nobody said a word. So I realized at that time that no one listened to that radio station. And it worked out great because at that point, I figured, you know, I could do these funny voices and stuff and do ridiculous things on the air, and no one cares because no one listens, even the manager. And so I did, and it afforded me an opportunity to develop some characters and a personality I never would have had. In fact, that's one of my personalities now. Hello? I'm not talking to you now. Okay. No, that's a fact. I never know which one it is. I just answer anyway.
Yes.
So where'd you get the voices in the first place?
Voices, I guess, and characters come from people you've known. I knew a guy that was the mayor of Lebanon, Kentucky. And he was a big guy, and he owned a nightclub. And if you could crawl, if you're 14, 13, 12 years old, if you can get up over that chair to the bar, get your nose over the bar, he'd give you a beer. And he used to stand around with a cigar in his mouth, and his pants were always half-zipped. So one day I was looking for a shyster-type character. Not that he was that. Although he spent some time in prison, I think, I heard, for hijacking as mayor. He was still mayor that hijacked an appliance truck. So I developed a character called a big, fat, bowling guy with a stubby cigar in his mouth and his pants half-zipped. And this time, I'm being honest with you. That's what he always said. And this time, I'm being honest with you. And I thought, what about the other times? But he was a good guy. And funny thing, though, I got a letter from his attorney saying that they knew who the character was based on. And at first, it was like, oh, they're going to sue me. But as it turns out, they were laughing. They were joking. They thought it was funny. He said I made him famous, so it was okay.
So how did the show become what it is today?
It caught fire, actually. And went right down, and that's how it became. I don't know. The radio show that I do changes all the time. I think because I have a short attention span. My mother used to say, if they knew what ADD was when you were a child, you'd have been the poster boy. And I think that accounts for a lot of new and different characters that come along. I do have characters that stay, and that's because if I stop doing them, people start, hey, where's Gilbert? Or where's Earl Pitts and all of that stuff. So,
how long has this been going on that you've been doing it?
Nearly 40 years.
Nearly?
40 years. Oh, God, I just messed my pants. I'm not kidding.
Is it going to keep going on?
Yeah, for another, I think today, I know today I'm working. Tomorrow I may retire.
Now, we're in some remote location where you hide out sometimes. What exactly are you doing here this week?
This is Dunellen, Florida, and it's about as a redneck town as you could possibly find. But there's some magic about the place. It's just really gritty down home. Not that gritty. It's a really neat place. It's on the Rainbow River, and I've been coming here on vacation for 20 years and always thought I'd like to retire here, and came across this property on a bend in the river. It's a river that's as clear as a bell. It has the color and places of the Caribbean. And if you can imagine a river that way. I'm from Memphis, grew up in Mississippi, and all I saw was muddy water. And when I saw this, I was mesmerized and thought, someday. And I got the property and immediately built the studio and, you know, started coming down, working down here with an ISD in line. And you know, things are, it's miraculous.
How often do you come back?
As often as I can, maybe 2 or 3 months out of the year.
Do you know any other people who do this sort of thing?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of people that are now using home studios. Program directors hate it. I don't know why. I think it's you're not there, so if they want to yell at somebody, they have to call you, and you can hang up or jerk the phone out of the wall. But then I don't jerk the phone out of the wall anymore because now it's my phone. If it's the station's, let's go, you know. Shut up, Ennis.
Now, there's no engineers around here. Does this mean you know everything about all this stuff?
I know nothing. I talk in here, it comes out there, it's magic. What I do is, there are some engineers in the area, the broadcast store over here. Also, Clear Channel has some people, of course, in Tampa, that if I call and say, hey, want to spend a weekend at the river, and nobody's there, and yeah, you know, just take a look at the studio, clean it up, and whatever's wrong. And so far, in the 2-3 years I've been here, I've had no major problems, except we do have lightning storms, and it'll knock the power off. And one day I'm on the air, I go to a stop set, bam, lightning hit. And I'm thinking, ah, God. So they call me on the phone, what are we going to do? And my co-host says, I'll just say that you had an emergency and you had to leave. We're waiting for the power to come back on. I said, no, because my daughter listens probably, or someone I know will get nervous if there's a family emergency. I said, say this, and I do have asthma. I said, say I had an asthma attack, and I forgot my inhaler, and I'm laying on the couch until my wife brings it down to the station. So 30 minutes later, we go back on the air, and I immediately hit the mic and go, oh, okay, I'm a lot better now. And I was okay. So as long as I can come up with an excuse as to why I'm off for 30 minutes or an hour, or, you know, I wasn't so cheap, and I would get a, you know, what do they call that? It sounds really good in the background when you're on the air, too.
How about the characters around here, rednecks and stuff? Do you pick up some stuff from them?
No, they pick up stuff from me.
They do.
remember, I'm from Mississippi.
So you're the reason for what this place is.
These people here are like a bunch of New Yorkers to me. I can go to Mississippi and I can say, you know what makes me sick? And they say, what's so funny about that? when I go through the routine. You know what makes me so angry? I just want to drop my pants, take me a butter knife, spread Alpo all over my butt cheek, superglue my tongue to a fire hydrant, wait for a pack of wild pit bulls to come along and lick it off. Hell, if I talk like that, they think I'm Eric Severide. <You know?
laughs> Give us a rundown of your broadcast career, where you started.
I was at KLPL in Lake Providence, typical gypsy disc jockey. I went from there to Monroe, Louisiana for $5 a week more. I went from there to Jackson, Mississippi for $5 a week more.
What years?
Oh, I don't know what years. I mean, I have no, honestly, I have no, I know I started in about 64. And so maybe not 40 years. It's been 38 years, 39. After 35, it doesn't count. I mean, then it's all, you know, it's just, you know, time. It's a continuum at that point. In 64, maybe stayed there for 6 months, went to Monroe for maybe a year. At WMPS, worked for Plow, and after Plow, back to W1 in Jackson, then back to Memphis at WDIA, where I was Johnny Apollo, your blue-eyed soul brother in the front row, putting a slidey glide dip in your bumper drum and said, bless my right on rock and roll, so light my candle, make me hot, that kind of thing. And then I went to Wacky in Louisville. That was kind of my first big-time radio station. Worked there for 4 years, and left there, went to New Orleans. My first job as a program director. Hated it. And Willie Hennis came down and said, come to Detroit. And I went to CKLW, where if you're on the air at CKLW, you can talk into a microphone. CKLW? It comes out, CKLW. Everybody talked like that. But it was a great radio station at the time. And left there, and my wife really wanted to go back home, and I was up for it. Went back to WHAS in Louisville, ran into an insane manager. I'm probably the only guy on radio ever to do that. And decided that discretion being the better part of valor, which I had none anyway, I left and worked in Tampa for about 3 months. Randy Michaels called me, said, I hear you like Florida. And I said, yeah. He said, go work a book. And I worked a book, came back, and then he called me, go work the next book. I worked a book and came back, and then went to work at WLW in Cincinnati, and that was 20 years ago, and was going to leave there, in fact. I was thinking about going to either L.A. or San Diego. I had an opportunity in both places, and my daughter came to me and she said, Dad, I've been to 5 different schools, 5 different years, and I sure like my friends here in Northern Kentucky, and is there any chance I could stay with them? And that pow, grabs you. So I went into Randy Michaels. I thought they were ready to dump me and the whole station because they'd just taken over. I was ready for him to say, well, thank you very much, but no thank you. And I said, well, if I stay, it's going to take a 10-year contract, no cut. My attorney draws it up, and I named a figure, and Randy said, okay, what else? And then you're going, a parking place? And I'm trying to think of things, thinking, damn, I should have got an agent or something. But luckily, it was nice, and they took care of me, and I've been there for 20 years, and I'm very happy I stayed.
We need to know what you think of stuff. Just stuff.
Stuff?
Yeah.
Like what kind of stuff?
Like, you know, whether music's good or bad, or turkey. Certain kinds, or...
You know, I never cared about it. As a musician, I could appreciate probably what anybody plays and anybody likes. I've never really cared what I played on the air. I could have easily played country as I could opera, as long as between the songs I got to do what I was able to do. The music was just a, you know, a vehicle to get listeners. I know they would never listen to me. Until later on, of course. Now I don't have the music. But I do have to work harder.
Who's your listener? Who are you thinking about when you're doing the show?
I'm thinking, no one.
No one.
I knew a guy that used to take a picture of whatever his current girlfriend, whoever she was, and he would put it in front of him on the board. And he would look at her and talk to her all night. Other people who imagine one person, I may imagine someone that I've been talking to the night before that laughed at something I said. And then if I say something, then I might imagine that person laughing as sort of an audience reaction thing. But I never picture who I'm talking to. It's like I'm on stage and there are lights on me and I don't see the audience. So if I ever pictured who these people were, it would frighten me, probably. I wouldn't do much of what I do now. I'd be afraid to talk, probably.
So is there such a thing as a killer program and then sometimes a lousy program?
Oh, yeah. Some days you come in, you're on, you're hot, you're up. And you leave laughing, thinking, man, was I good today? Was I funny today? Was I informative today? Did I have a good topic? Whatever. And other days, you know, program director calls, you know, hello. I know, yeah. I get it. No, hold on. Hello? I'm doing an interview. That's okay. Go ahead. I got everything, man. I'm ready for you. I'm so bad the bees don't buzz. Can you call me at 2:45? Okay, hook me up at 2:30 and then give me a call. I'll be done with this by then. All right, thank you.
So now, who was that?
That was the guy at the station that's checking that I got everything that they faxed. That was my producer, and making sure that everything was together. And I said, yeah, I got it all. Although I don't have it all. And I lied. And I'll wing it.
What does he send you?
They send me things like interviews we're going to have. Like, we're going to interview the guy, the Hot 100 albums of all time. Which, of course, change every year. The best albums of all time change every year. And it's great, because then we have another interview. Although we could play last year's interview if they came out with the same list. It would be easier, I guess. Yeah.
Do you ever have any terrible things happen?
Things happen?
Yeah. Do you talk to people on the air or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. You know, I'll have people call up, and I'm on when the helicopter's up. I can't be in delay. Yet, I do like to have interaction with the audience. And, you know, there are so many times somebody calls up and says, you know, F you. And, you know, then you've just got to have a good comeback for F you.
What's a comeback like?
If you too. You know, especially if you have a delay, it's great. You know, when somebody calls you, some days we'll be in delay and someone, you know, they'll light off with something. Or there's a caller you don't like. Well, then F you. Then you hit the button. Of course, the day that I do that, I've never done it. But the day that I do that is going to be the delay's not on today. So I don't do it.
What's a delay?
It's a 7-second delay that when you talk, it comes out 7 seconds later. Plays havoc with your headsets.
Does it play havoc with your mind?
No, you don't hear it. I mean, all you hear is the on-the-air signal. I mean, you hear the signal that's coming from the board that you're talking. You don't hear that. You know, it just goes out later. It's magic.
If you were going to pick music to play at any one point, what would you pick?
Blues. Because I play a lot myself. I enjoy it. I know most of, I don't know them personally, but I know a lot of the people who do it from, you know, listening to it often. And it's my favorite music. But as I said, I mean, I do a character called Howlin' Blind Muddy Slim, yo, 60-minute Jelly Belly Toe Jam Man, where I'm a drummer, and I would have these really good players in, but there were times when there would be no one there that would play to back me up, so I'd play harmonica, and anybody can play harmonica. If you breathe in and breathe out and have the right key, you know, it's not that hard. So I wanted to do more, so about 3 years ago, I always played guitar, but I took it up and got serious about it, and now I can back myself up. It's kind of scary when you got a Larry Goshorn or someone, Marco Sastry, across from you that plays, or Sonny Mormon, who plays, you know, great guitar, and you're like, hey, but I steal licks from him, so it's okay.
Do you ever get sick of doing your show?
Yeah. Every time you have a bad show, you're sick of it. You're doing a great show, and when it's over with, it's fun. I'll never stop doing this. If you have too many bad shows in a row, I think that's probably when it's time to hang it up. I did this week, but I'm not listening to myself. I need the money.
What do you say to yourself?
Drugs. You take a lot of drugs. Yeah. You do something to get yourself happy. You know, you have to get happy. If happiness comes in a pill, hell, it's happiness.
Are you ever unhappy?
Not as long as they have the little pills.
I see.
No,
I know.
Some there? I've been unhappy at the station I'm with now. I mean, they've done some stupid things. As far in my eyes, in their eyes, they were probably doing very good business things. But if they didn't benefit me, I, of course, think, well, that's stupid. So I've been through some times with them. But all in all, it's been great.
What kind of friends do you have?
It's funny, but usually musicians. I know some radio people. I don't hang out with them much. But I guess because that's my history, my past. And I hang out with you know, guys that, you know, play a lot. Plus, I'm in the restaurant business, and we also have some music in there, too. We have a thing called a blues room, and we have an open stage blues jam and all that, and so, you know, I come in quite a bit of contact with people there.
Would you buy spots on your own show?
Absolutely not. I'm not stupid. Not unless I was doing them live, because right now we're running like, I don't know, anywhere 20, 23 minutes an hour. I think anything recorded is lost. I'm sure people get results, and some people don't. Some people do. The ones that always get results are usually the live spots, when I'm talking about, you know, the product, and just kind of tripping over words or whatever. I think that draws people in to hear me talking about it. But recorded spot, not unless we're down to 14 minutes an hour, which I don't think will happen for a long time. Bottom line is the bottom line.
Now, you're on AM radio, a big, fat AM radio station.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what's going to happen with radio, and AM radio, and FM radio, or whatever.
I have no idea.
Satellite radio.
You know, I'm not concerned because I'm done. You know, I hate to say it that way. I don't know what's going to happen unless somebody comes up with some incredible way to beat the information and the entertainment you're getting from that AM station. It's going to be tough to throw it totally off. And even FM, with satellite coming in, you know, what's in their future? So as an entertainer or a radio personality or DJ, whatever it is, I concentrate on that. And I usually have my head down and I'm into that. I'm not into my audience. I don't know who they are because the lights are too bright. So I just try to be funny. And if they're still there, that's fine. If they're not, I've been doing this for a long time and I'm ready to hang it up if they're ready for me to hang it up.
What would your epitaph say?
F you. No, I don't know. What would my epitaph say? God, that's a hard question, Bob.
Well, I didn't want it to be.
What would my epitaph? I never thought of it. Let's see. I don't know. I'm sorry. That's too deep of a question for me to think. I got to think about that.
We're going to leave it blank. Okay. You know.
What would your epitaph say? It would say nothing. And I don't know.
Leave a place for people to write on it.
Yeah. I wouldn't say what my epitaph said anyway. Other people have to give you an epitaph. I mean, if you say it, it's not an epitaph. It's what you think of yourself. It's what other people say of you that I think.
Now, while you've been doing all this, the world has changed a lot, and you watched it change, and mm-hmm. you've talked to the world while it was changing?
Sure, I talked to the world while it was changing because I'm part of the world. I'm part of the change, in fact. When something new comes down the pike, like the election fiasco that other people thought was a fiasco, I thought it was great. I loved it. There were people calling, why are we suffering like... You're not suffering, you're having a great time. You're on the radio, it's wonderful. You're the talk show host. Oh my God, this is... They loved it. We all loved it. So you took that was part of the world, and you became, for a month, a serious talk show, but at times getting kind of weird with it, you know? The longer it went on, the sillier we became about it. But every aspect of the world is what goes into your head and out there.
So while you're thinking...
Not every aspect, but there are a few that you know about.
A lot of people, and a lot of them on the radio, who talk on the radio, don't think things have gotten very good, but you seem to think they've gotten better.
I think so. The people who don't think things have gotten very good are the very same people that when you came into radio... Remember when you came into radio and the old guys going, oh, these punks. Well, guess what? We're the guys going, who are these punks now? And the guys right now, in 30 years, they're going to be saying, who are these punks? That's just the way it works.
The beginning days of rock and roll, you know, I mean, Top 40 radio.
Yeah.
What was it like being a part of Top 40 radio in its heyday?
Top 40 radio, it made you almost a rock star, but in a limited area. I would go to the edge of that area, stick my foot out and say, my foot is no longer a star. I could bring it back in, and I was a star. When I worked at Wacky in Louisville, I mean, and today, there are people that come from Louisville and say, I grew up with you. There was a guy once, I swear, the guy walked up to me in one of the restaurants, and he said, he's on a walker, he's got to be 80 years old. And he says, I grew up listening to you. Huh? It was really cool to be someone who maybe contributed something to some lives, good and bad. And let's face it, there was some bad, too.
Yeah. But radio is different now than it was back in the 50s and 60s when Top 40 was really king.
It's different because there are different people. There's different music being played. The diversity of radio has changed, you know, so much that it can't be the same. Back in those days, we played Top 40 music, and we had news, and we had weather, and we had maybe traffic reports and things like that. We encompassed everything. Now, there are stations that do weather. There are stations that do traffic. There are stations that do music. There are stations that do news. So you don't have that giant audience. I know a guy, Tim Tyler, that once had a 99 in a rating book. A 99 on a Sunday night. It was a 99 in a Pulse or something. And you got to figure, everybody's listening. And more people listened in those days because there was less to listen to, which was better for us because we were bigger stars. and we made more money. No, wait, we made less money. How could this be? I found a flaw.
Talk about the payola.
You know, I'm pretty upset. In the payola days, I never got a thing. And I don't know where you are, some of you record guys who gave it to everyone else, but if I could go back in time, I wouldn't play any of your damn records. Because I never got any payola. And I wonder why. I had decent ratings. I did okay. I mean, I deserve some kind of payola. I never got it. One time, James Brown supposedly was in the next room in a hotel. All the jocks came in. I don't know what he gave them. I have forgotten how much money it was. But it was. He made sure he laid a little money on everybody. Not payola. It wasn't to play any certain record. But James Brown showed his appreciation by tips. As a DJ, we got tips. That's what they should have called it. Tips. Not payola. Hey, I mean, if they get us for payola, why don't they get a restaurant server? Why don't they get anybody a tip, a taxi driver? It's a tip. That's all it was. It wasn't payola. If Dick Clark and his stupid lawyers had thought of that...
Your Honor, it wasn't payola. It was tips.
They'd have got the income tax, and we didn't report. You got to report your tips. Okay, we reported them, then it'd been okay. But payola, I got none. And I'm pissed.
How'd you get your name, Gary Burbank?
I got my name Gary Burbank because I was a huge fan of Gary Owens, and I used to do a Gary Owens character. This character, he was my announcer, and he was doing Laugh-In at the time. And so I went to Louisville, and Bob Todd, who was the program director, his name is Bob Thurgland, but that is a stupid name, so he changed it to Bob Todd. Bob Todd said, you know, you should be Gary Burbank of beautiful downtown Louisville and do that character all the time. And I did. And we had a showcase control room. I wore a suit and a tie. I wore glasses without any glass in them, you know. And I would sit on the air, this is Gary Burbank from beautiful downtown Louisville. And people in Louisville today come to me and say, I remember when you were on Laugh-In. I did that for about a year, in fact, until I gradually kind of got back into what I could do myself. And Gary Owens was always my hero. And we used to tape Laugh-In. My mother would tape Laugh-In on audio tape. We didn't have videotape then. She would send it to me. They delayed it in Louisville until Saturday night. She would send it to me. I'd get it on Thursday. I'd listen to all their material, do all their material on Friday. And then people on Saturday night would hear the jokes that I just told on Friday and think, my God, that must be the guy. He's got the jokes beforehand. So people today are like, hey, you're on Laugh-In. And I used to deny, but now I say, yeah, thank you. But Owens and I have since become good friends, and I've really had a chance to see what a funny, funny, brilliant individual he is.
What do you think of as DJ retirement? What's going to happen when you're all finished?
When I'm done, I'll be playing a lot of golf. I do a couple of syndicated characters, and I'll probably continue, you know, messing with that a little bit. I will play a lot of golf and maybe do a character or two, maybe work one day a week.